don't have enough time to sit down and read all the best Bitcoin articles? Well, let us read them for you. This is a Crypto Economy Quick Read. What is up, crew? Welcome back to the show. We have got, I got a fun one today that I want to hit, that I've been wanting to hit for a while, but I've been thinking about a lot more about it lately, it's a piece by Nick Szabo. It's one of the ones that I just kind of want to get a refresher on, because it's all about it's about monetizing things and kind of the challenges of dealing with that. It's not a very long one, but it's one that I've read in the past and I haven't read recently, so I wanted to go over it again and just kind of flesh out my thoughts on this topic. I have a lot of stuff in the works. Keep checking back with cryptoeconomy.life. I've got, if you have not listened to the Iterative Capital thesis yet, you can go back and listen to the full nine episodes of this show that we have covered that on, or you can wait. There's going to be a long read version available that will be posted both on the Iterative Capital page and on my website that will include the there's like a preface and like kind of like a timeline of how we got to Bitcoin, like on cryptography and stuff starts all the way back in the early 1900s, I think. And then there's also an appendix, a section after the main body of the piece about price movements and fractals and kind of the theories around how the price moves in Bitcoin and that kind of stuff. So there's a lot going on there, and I'm also working on trying to get some episodes together for another playlist. This one will be on understanding Bitcoin. It'll all be about like the philosophy, the mentality, like the politics or apolitics, whatever you want to call, of Bitcoin. So that one I think will be a really fun playlist to hit when I get that up and running. I'll have that on the website at cryptoeconomy.life as well. And I'm also working for quite a while on a few projects in the background here that hopefully we'll start to see something soon. I'm still working on my second CASA video as well. That should be sooner than all the other things I've got going on. So keep an eye out for all that stuff. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter at TheCryptoEconomy, and check out cryptoeconomy.life, the website where we've got all the different social medias and stuff up there. But for now, without further ado, let's jump into Szabo's work. This is, again, by Nick Szabo, and this is on his blog, unenumerated.blogspot.com, and it is titled, Estimating and Minimizing Consumer Worry. The process of selling in general, and web commerce in particular, is often described or charted as a funnel. Prospective customers are poured in at one end, and a fewer number of paying customers come out at the other. The other prospects spill out through other holes or over the side of the funnel and don't bring you any revenue. The fraction of customers left, converted from prospects to customers, is called the conversion rate. As prospects proceed from initial interest to final sale, from initial entry page to clicking the final I agree button, more and more of them become discouraged by various worries which beset the consumer. They drop out. The remaining prospects, those who have not dropped off, have been converted into customers or into an audience for your advertisers. There are a variety of factors that cause drop-off, which vary from business to business. A common cause is forms. Simplifying forms often greatly increases conversion rates. For example, in one study, cutting the number of lines on a form in half increased conversions by a third. As one web designer put it, quote, "Is every field you're asking the visitor to submit absolutely necessary? Can you trim the fat and make the process simpler?" Besides the sheer tediousness and time consumed in filling out forms, rational consumers also worry about the potentials for privacy violation and identity theft from the information most e-commerce sites currently require them to divulge: physical and email addresses, phone numbers used for cross-site behavioral tracking, insecure credit card numbers, and more. Instances of regret that one has filled out a form only to have one's trust violated, or pride among the sophisticated that they refuse to fill out such a form, are on the rise. The worst worry culprit is usually the step you most want customers to complete: paying you. Quote, "The credit card form likely has the highest abandonment rate of any other part of the sign-up process." If you don't require payments, you are probably funding your service through advertisements. Those also cause worries. Ads typically distract and delay from the content users are after, provide a low quality of entertainment or information, and are too often offensive. And sophisticated users are worried about the tracking that tends to go with ads. Ad blocking grew nearly tenfold between 2009 and 2014. Replacing ads and identity-based payments with payments that don't require identity, such as Bitcoin, can greatly reduce these worries, lowering the barriers and hesitations that currently prevent consumers from paying for your service. But there remains a big worry that no payment system can reduce. Consumers worry about whether they are getting their money's worth. The mental transaction cost problem. See also this paper. Link. If e-commerce were as worry-free as some of it could be, your customers would neither have to fill out forms nor be bothered by ads, nor have to worry about repeated charges for content or services of variable value. They would be able to just insert a few digital coins into your online vending machine and not have to worry about losing your service for another year. Eliminate forms and eliminate repeated payments. Both are key to worry-minimized e-commerce. Many Bitcoin startups are making the grave mistake of replacing one set of worries with another. The ability of cryptocurrency systems to facilitate small payments tempts many companies to nickel and dime their customers with pay-per-click micropayments and other such excruciating schemes. Don't follow the many lemmings who have already jumped off that cliff. Stick to long-term subscriptions for content or other services of variable value, and pay per unit for fungible units of consistent value, as in phone minutes. That way, customers aren't saddled with having to constantly reevaluate the amount and worthiness of recurring charges. The cost to your customers of having to finance a year's worth of low-cost subscription to a reputable brand is almost always far less than the mental transaction cost of recurring charges for content or services of variable value. The ideal worry-free commerce is to stick the coin into the machine once and then never have to pay again for an entire year. A vending machine for subscriptions. Reduce your customers' worries across the board. Eliminate forms and eliminate recurring charges. Ideal worry minimization can only be closely approached in some purely online forms of commerce, such as video streaming, remote storage, privacy services, and the like. The more physical and offline contract performances are, a common example being physical delivery, the more location, various kinds of identity, legal, social network, etc., may need to come into play, adding, often greatly and necessarily, to the worry overhead, the mental transaction cost of your relationship with your consumers. I have previously called this worry-minimized commerce by a narrower label: form-minimized commerce. The complexity of the forms you make your users fill is indicative of the worries you are causing them, and thus the barriers you are putting up between your prospects and their decisions to purchase your services. When you are a consumer, the tediousness of the forms you are filling out is not only a direct cost of your time and your ability to enjoy that time, it is on top of that a decent proxy measure of the odds of your identity being stolen and of your privacy otherwise being violated. the fewer forms you fill out, the more the tediousness, worries, and risks in your life caused by interacting with the world's institutions will drop in proportion. While such a proxy measure does not account in particular for the wide variety of information that can be disclosed, nor that some kinds of information, social security numbers, are more risky to divulge than others, throwaway email addresses, nor for the wide variety of risks in identity theft and privacy violation that are consequent. Nevertheless, consumers necessarily must bring to bear such sweeping rules of thumb in order to satisfactorily navigate the bizarre complexities of the digital world. And when your users are using, whether consciously or implicitly, such estimates, you, the service provider, and the product designer must use them too. Add to the forms your customers must fill out the repeated charges you must make your customers make, and we get a rough proxy measure of the worry that you are causing your consumers. Index of worry equals number of lines of forms plus number of repeated charges for content or services of variable value. If you are funded through ads rather than consumer payments, you can substitute for the repeated charges the proportion of screen space covered by your ads, or any other reasonable estimate of the delay and distraction the ads on your pages cause. The index of worry allows you to estimate and minimize the worries you are causing your users, and as a result, to minimize the drop-off in your sales funnel and maximize the number of users coming back for more, and willing to view your ads or pay for the privilege. All right, and that will close out Estimating and Minimizing Consumer Worry by Nick Szabo. He's got a, I mentioned the link, the see also this paper. He's actually got a paper on mental transaction costs and micropayments that's, I think it's like, let's see. I've got it in here somewhere. It's like 14 pages, but I think a couple of pages are appendix and sources and stuff like that. So it might be more like 9 pages, 10 pages, something like that. 10, 13, 12 pages it looks like. Yeah. So I've actually been thinking of diving into that one. I may or may not do it on the show. If I really like it and I think it's something that I really want to dig into and talk about a lot on the show, I probably will. But this one in particular, one note, this was published in 2015, so this is a pretty old article. Well, I guess not that old, it's 3 years old. But this one's very, I've talked about this on the show a number of times, and I've gotten a couple of really good suggestions from other people in, like on Twitter and stuff like that, and a number of people that I've reached out to just kind of trying to feel out what the best way to monetize something like this is, because there's a couple of like caveats around it that ads are great in a number of different ways, specifically if I have exclusive control over those ads, because I don't want to advertise for a company that I don't like or use myself. But at the same time, I mean, he's absolutely right. Like, particularly like ads, you know, they want to go at the beginning of the show. And it's like Joe Rogan. Like when I'm listening to Joe Rogan, I don't listen to all of his shows, but when I do listen to him, probably, you know, once every couple of weeks, he has like 9 minutes of ads at the beginning and I usually skip it, you know? Like I can't like I have to take my experience as a consumer and think about like what I'm doing to my show in that regard. Like I'm just going to cause people to skip the beginning of the show. It's not that I particularly dislike that about Joe Rogan's show, but it definitely delays me from the content that I'm going after. And Bitcoin and the Lightning Network in particular, because it's finally growing into something usable, and growing into a network, God, the Lightning Jewel, if y'all have not seen that, I really want to get that up and running. Unfortunately, I can't, it doesn't look like I can link it to my Casa node. I am trying to break my warrant. I'm trying to void my warranty here with the Casa node and open up the command line and making changes that way, which voids your warranty. So if you do that, you know, big caveat, don't do that if you aren't willing to risk everything you got going on with your Casa node. But I think, I don't think I can get around it. I really want to play around with the command line and see what is truly possible with the LND instance on the Casa node. And I'm hoping I can get around that without needing to rely on the actual Casa software that they have created, which obviously does not have full, you know, command line control over the LND node. It's a much simpler, like, plug and play, get everything up and running, and kind of feed you all the details very clearly and cleanly. So the Lightning Network makes a really, really interesting addition to this, because it's very much like it's an extension of Bitcoin. I don't need, like, as a provider of services, if anybody is going to the website looking for something, you don't have to fill out a form. You don't, and it's getting easier and easier to pay invoices. That's what the Lightning Jewel, I really think, is a pretty powerful tool, because it really quickly accomplishes the task of making a Lightning payment. Whereas right now it's a very sluggish process, even though obviously it can be brought down to a click-click kind of thing. So I think that's, like, these tools, like, I have to figure out how to use these tools. They're too powerful, and they really do change the game in that regard, because I wouldn't need any, I don't want to take credit card information from people and have to store that and worry about it getting stolen or hacked or something. Like, I mean, yeah, I consider myself extremely security conscious and reasonably skilled at that, but I just don't want to have to, like, who cares about consumer worry? It's my worry. I don't want that honeypot sitting there for people to take later on. You know, that just seems like a huge, huge stress for me that I don't want. Like, I neither want the consumers to have to worry about that, and I don't want to have to worry about that. That's why it's one of the big reasons that Bitcoin as a push system is so powerful in the idea, or in the space of e-commerce. And Lightning Network doesn't change that. Lightning Network makes that faster and cleaner after we get past the bootstrapping stage. There's still a number of problems to work out with Lightning Network, and I think atomic multipath payments, I think, are going to be one of the absolute critical things that has to get worked out before serious adoption of Lightning really happens, as far as the consumer side. But being a push system makes it, like, as somebody taking payments, it's like you can't make recurring payments, which is a little bit frustrating. But as a consumer, it's the best of both worlds. It's exactly what you want, because you know when you push somebody a payment, you are not giving them authorization to take another payment later, whether or not you continue using their service, or whether or not you want to cancel. I mean, there have been times where I have signed up for services that didn't stop payments when I canceled the service. And that's a risk, even though it's relatively small. I've had to cancel services multiple times, send emails, and then have to, you know, fill out a form with my bank and close a card and get a new card. I mean, I've had serious headaches with, you know, credit card information getting stolen, or services not still charging me that I'm not using anymore. There was one, like, with Liberty Classroom, Tom Wood's Liberty Classroom. They didn't do anything wrong, but I forgot that when it actually cycled over. After listening to one of the full classes up there, I had just stopped using it. I listened to the Logic class and one of their, what was the other class? It was one of the economics ones. I can't remember specifically what it's called. But it was really good, but I had just gone through it, and then I'd gotten back onto some audiobooks, and stuff and just kind of let it slip my mind. And, you know, 5 months of not even going up there later, and the charge hit my bank account, and, you know, there goes $100, and I was like, oh, crap, I totally forgot about that. Luckily, it was Tom Wood's Liberty Classroom, and I just sent him an email. I was like, man, I'm so sorry. I just let this slip my mind, and I have not actually been using the service. I intend to do this again in the future sometime when I have more time to listen to these, but I actually did not want to renew it at this point. But they were more than helpful. They immediately just refunded the full payment, and it wasn't a concern at all. But the fact that that power was there because of the payment system that I used, like, you know, it was in the terms and conditions that, like, I was obligated to pay. Like, they had no obligation, no legal obligation to pay me back. I had signed up and agreed to have a recurring payment every year on whatever date. And that's a real concern. It's certainly something that I consider when signing up for something, especially if it's a service I don't know very well. You know, I know, like with Amazon in particular, like I have returned enough items. I do enough commerce with Amazon that I have returned enough items that I know that they're not really going to put up, any kind of a fight or anything. Like, they're going to just do whatever they can to make the customer happy. Usually their process is incredibly simple. But if I'm going to some sort of a service or business that I haven't used in a long time, or I haven't used at all, and I just don't know much about them or their reputation, and I'm taking a chance, that worry is far, far higher than with a service I know will refund me. Like, if I did Liberty Classroom again, I wouldn't worry about it for a second, because I know Tom Woods is legit, and he wants to have a good, respectable business. Like, his reputation is extremely important to him. So, again, that was something that wasn't a huge worry, but this is because it was something that I was very familiar with. I knew the reputation of the person I was doing business with, and that is very often not the case. I'm usually taking chances on a product that I don't know or a business that's new. And in the Bitcoin space, that is 90% of what's going on, because everything in the Bitcoin space is new. So minimizing consumer worry is a huge deal, and it's something that must be thought about. And I really like that this was a very simple piece, and it was short, but I think it's a really important conversation to have as e-commerce changes and as we move to systems like Bitcoin and the Lightning Network that really allow us to make changes to commerce and consumer worry that weren't possible before. And even though the old infrastructure, like, it's so much easier to get customers to pay right now with credit cards. And the reason is simply because of the network effect and the infrastructure. It's stupid easy to get services and plugins for a WordPress site that take credit card payments, or that put a paywall up ahead of something rather than having to go to GitHub and download something and try to figure out how to squeeze it into your website from Lightning Charge. It only works with a C Lightning implementation instead of the L&D implementation. Like, you know, like the newness, the immaturity of the Bitcoin infrastructure and payment system, and then the fact that there's very few consumers and users who know how to do all of this makes it extremely difficult to be profitable at this point, to take payments exclusively in Bitcoin or the Lightning Network. Bitcoin in particular, because people don't spend money in a bear market. E-commerce and Bitcoin and paying for Bitcoin services drops like a rock. There was some piece that I read a number of years ago. I'm not sure if I've actually covered this on the podcast, but it was talking about the wealth effect of Bitcoin and how when businesses like that take payments or sell services in Bitcoin, have huge explosions in business during the bull markets because people look at their savings. You know, they spent, I know I do this, it happens to me every bull market. I get like excited and I finally start actually spending some of my Bitcoin on services. Like I'll, you know, have put, managed to put aside a couple of $100 over the past couple of months, and then the price starts skyrocketing and it's like 2-3x in a period of 3 months, and suddenly, you know, $400 that I put away in savings is $1,200 or $1,500, and the wife and I like, well, let's take a weekend vacation somewhere. So it's definitely a real thing because I see it happen in my life. I scramble to avoid doing any payments or cashing out anything in Bitcoin when there's times like these, like in like deep bear markets, because I know like this is the most terrible time to be giving up my Bitcoin. So that makes it incredibly hard to deal with that, like as a service or business, like because your business not only would any investment or capital that you have in Bitcoin be reliant on the market price, but the amount of Bitcoin or the amount of business and services that you sell are also related to the price of Bitcoin. So there's a lot of new challenges for businesses and service providers and stuff in the Bitcoin ecosystem. And hopefully that will start to taper off a little bit and all these moves will get less and less violent as time goes on. I mean, it's pretty much inevitable that that's the case. But minimizing consumer worry and this, you know, rough equation that Szabo has laid out in his piece makes it a good strategy to get users to spend more, maybe even during bear markets, but to cross that gap when you don't have to take down some extended form of credit card information or, you know, in the Bitcoin and Lightning Network world, you don't need, why do you even need your customer's name and, you know, personal information? You just don't, to provide them with a service, unless, of course, you're shipping something to them. But it's important that I think we actually make that transition, that we don't fall into the old habits just because that's kind of the default, because I got a plugin that asks for all this information. Well, that should be all the information that I need, right? You have to stop and ask, particularly as a service provider or business, what do I actually need from my consumer? Because the less I require from them and the more I get them straight to what they are looking for as quickly and with as few barriers as possible, the more likely we're going to have a high conversion rate and people won't fall out through holes or leaks in the funnel. So this was always a piece that I enjoyed. I've read it a couple of times now and realized that I hadn't done it on the podcast. So I hope you guys enjoyed that one. Don't forget to check out, if you have not read any of the other stuff, I know we've done a couple of things on the podcast, like probably 4 or 5 of Szabo's pieces on the show now. Obviously, I've got Shelling Out that you can find right on the front page, pinned at the top of the page on cryptoeconomy.life if you want to hear that amazing work. I will be adding to this Estimating and Minimizing Consumer Worry. And I thought this was a really fun one that I have always, it's always gotten me to think more. And maybe we'll hit soon his paper on micropayments and estimating mental transaction costs. So don't forget to follow me on Twitter and check out cryptoeconomy.life if you want to keep hearing these in audio, because there's definitely more to come from Nick Szabo. And with that, don't forget to follow Nick Szabo at, I think it's what, Nick Szabo 4 on Twitter. I'll obviously link to him and tag him in this post. If you're not following Nick Szabo on Twitter, and if you have not checked out his blog, unenumerated.blogspot.com, or checked out his work at the NakamotoInstitute.org, a lot of collections in the literature section of Szabo's works, he is one not to be missed. You got to read his stuff. He has just got some amazing detail and thought about all kinds of things that are extremely pertinent to the legal, cryptographic, the security, the mental transaction costs. There's so many different varieties of topics that he writes about that are pertinent to Bitcoin and digital money, that he is just not one to be missed. So definitely follow him and check those out. I will link to it all in the show notes and on the website at cryptoeconomy.life. So yeah, don't forget to check all that stuff out and follow me, subscribe to the show, and share it with anybody else you know in the crypto economy and Bitcoin space. And I will catch you all back here tomorrow with another episode of the Crypto Economy Podcast. All right, guys, until next time, take it easy.